Welcome to The Mildly Interesting with Oliver Wilson, the official bedtime podcast of former insomniacs. Tomorrow is Friday, December 3rd, National Bartender Day. National Bartender Day aims to make customers think about the great service their favorite bartenders give while pouring pints, mixing cocktails, all while displaying great people skills or being a shoulder to cry on or a person to confide in. The day originated in America and is linked to the drinks brand Sailor Jerry. The brand organizes voting competitions to find the nation's best bartender and makes bar visits on the day to distribute free pizza, clothing, and taxi rides home for bartenders. You may have ordered a drink from a bartender, but have you ever wondered about the profession's history? Well, I have. And I think you might just find it mildly interesting. Subscribe to The Mildly Interesting on Apple Podcast, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts are available. We'll be right back. A bartender, also known as a barkeep, barman, barmaid, or mixologist, is a person who formulates and serves alcoholic or soft drink beverages behind the bar, usually in a licensed establishment. Bartenders also usually maintain the supplies and inventory for the bar. A bartender can generally mix classic cocktails such as Cosmopolitan, Manhattan, Old Fashioned, and Mojito. Bartenders are also usually responsible for confirming that customers meet the legal drinking age requirements before serving alcoholic beverages. In certain countries, such as Canada, the United Kingdom, and Sweden, bartenders are legally required to refuse more alcohol to drunk customers. Historically, bartending was a profession with a low reputation. It was perceived through the lens of ethical issues and various legal constraints related to serving alcohol. The pioneers of bartending as a severe profession appeared in the 19th century. Professor Jerry Thomas established the image of the bartender as a creative professional. Harry Johnson wrote a bartending manual and established the first bar management consulting agency. At the turn of the 20th century, slightly less than half the bartenders in London were women, such as Ada Coleman. Barmaids, as they were called, were usually the daughters of tradesmen or mechanics or, occasionally, young women from the better-born classes who had been thrown upon their own resources and needed an income. The bartending profession was generally a second occupation, used as transitional work for students to gain customer experience or save money for university fees. This is because bartenders in tipping countries like Canada and the United States can make significant money from their tips. This view of bartending as a career is changing worldwide, however, and bartending has become a profession by choice rather than necessity. It includes specialized education. European Bartender School operates in 25 countries. Cocktail competitions such as World Class and Bacardi Legacy have recognized talented bartenders in the past decade, and these bartenders, and others, spread the love of cocktails and hospitality throughout the world. Kathy Sullivan, the owner of Sidecar Bartending, expressed the difficulties with becoming a prolific bartender, comparing you to the drink you make. In drinks you want balance. And you have to be balanced physically, emotionally and mentally. In the United Kingdom, bar work is often not regarded as a long-term profession, unless the bartender is also the landlord, but more often as a second occupation or transitional work for students to gain customer experience or save money for university fees. It, therefore, lacks traditional employment protections and so has a high turnover. The high staff turnover due to low wages and poor employee benefits results in a shortage of skilled bartenders. Whereas a career bartender would know drink recipes, serving techniques, alcohol contents, correct gas mixes, and licensing law and would often have cordial relations with regular customers, short-term staff may lack these skills. Some pubs prefer experienced staff, although pub chains tend to accept inexperienced staff and provide training. Tipping bartenders in the United Kingdom is uncommon and not considered mandatory but greatly appreciated by the bartender. The appropriate way to tip a bartender in the UK is to say have one for yourself, encouraging the bartender to buy themselves a drink with one's money, where a bartender may instead opt to add a modest amount to a bill to take in cash at the end of their shift. The Bureau of Labor Statistics data on occupations in the United States, including that of the bartender, publishes a detailed description of the bartender's typical duties and employment and earnings statistics by those so employed, with 55% of a bartender's take-home pay coming in the form of tips. The hourly wage a bartender receives can vary depending on the state. The Federal Fair Labor Standards Act, FLSA, and most states' laws allow employers a tip credit, which counts employees' tips toward the minimum wage. As of September 26, 2020, the federal minimum wage rate is $7.25 per hour. Bartenders in the United States may work in a large variety of bars. These include hotel bars, restaurant bars, sports bars, gay bars, piano bars, and dive bars. The portable bar is also growing in popularity, which can be moved to different venues and special events. Bartenders may attend special schools or learn while on the job. Bartenders in the United States usually have on-the-job training from the owners, management, or other superior staff with experience. Prospective bartenders may gain experience by working as waitstaff in a restaurant with a bar. Some vocational schools offer bartenders' licenses. Some U.S. states require a bartender's license or a health certificate issued from the state. Most pubs and bars seek to recruit outgoing, personable individuals as bartenders. All bartenders must comply with all food and beverage regulations in the United States. All bartenders in the United States should be knowledgeable in mixing, garnishing, and serving drinks with a positive attitude and excellent communication skills. The competition for jobs is high in this field of work. When we return, the history of management in business. Management, or managing, is the administration of an organization, whether it is a business, a non-profit organization, or a government body. It is the art and science of managing resources. Management includes setting the strategy of an organization and coordinating the efforts of its employees, or of volunteers, to accomplish its objectives through the application of available resources, such as financial, natural, technological, and human resources. Run the business and change the business are two concepts used in management to differentiate between the continued delivery of goods or services and adapting goods or services to meet the changing needs of customers. The term management may also refer to managers who manage an organization. Some people study management at colleges or universities. Significant degrees in management include the Bachelor of Commerce, BB.com, Bachelor of Business Administration, BBA, Master of Business Administration, MBA, Master in Management, MSM or MIM, and, for the public sector, the Master of Public Administration, MPA, degree. Individuals who aim to become management specialists or experts, management researchers, or professors may complete the Doctor of Management, DM, the Doctor of Business Administration, DBA, or the PhD in Business Administration or Management. There has recently been a movement for evidence-based management. Larger organizations generally have three hierarchical levels of managers, in a pyramid structure. Senior managers, such as members of a board of directors and a chief executive officer, CEO, or a president of an organization. They set the organization's strategic goals and make decisions on how the overall organization will operate. Senior managers are generally executive-level professionals and provide direction to middle management, who directly or indirectly report to them. Middle managers, examples of these would include branch managers, regional managers, department managers, and section managers, who provide direction to frontline managers. Middle managers communicate the strategic goals of senior management to the frontline managers. Lower managers, such as supervisors and frontline team leaders, oversee the work of regular employees or volunteers in some voluntary organizations and provide direction on their work. In smaller organizations, a manager may have a much broader scope and may perform several roles or even all of the roles commonly observed in a large organization. Social scientists study management as an academic discipline, investigating areas such as social organization, organizational adaptation, and organizational leadership. The English verb manage has its roots in the 15th century French verb mesnager, which is often referred to in equestrian language as to hold in hand the reins of a horse. Also, the Italian term maneggiare, to handle, especially tools or a horse, is possible. In Spanish, manejar can also mean to rule the horses. These three terms derive from the two Latin words manus, hand, and agere, to act. The French word for housekeeping, menagerie, derived from ménager, to keep house, compare ménage for household, also encompasses taking care of domestic animals. Menagerie is the French translation of Xenophon's famous book O Economicus, Greek, Omicron Kappa Omicron Nu Omicron Mu Iota Kappa Sigma, on household matters and husbandry. The French word mesnagement, or management, influenced the semantic development of the English word management in the 17th and 18th centuries. Views on the definition and scope of management include Henri Fayal, 1841-1925, stated, "To manage is to forecast and to plan, to organize, to command, to coordinate and to control." Fredmund Malek, 1944, defines management as the transformation of resources into utility. Management is included as one of the factors of production, along with machines, materials, and money. Ghislain Delon defines management as a vulnerable force, under pressure to achieve results and endowed with the triple power of constraint, imitation and imagination, operating on subjective, interpersonal, institutional and environmental levels. Peter Drucker, 1909-2005, saw the basic task of management as twofold, marketing and innovation. Nevertheless, innovation is also linked to marketing. Product innovation is a central strategic marketing issue. Drucker identifies marketing as a key essence for business success, but management and marketing are generally understood as two different branches of business administration knowledge. Management involves identifying the mission, objective, procedures, rules, and manipulation of the human capital of an enterprise to contribute to the enterprise's success. Scholars have focused on managing individual, organizational, and inter-organizational relationships. This implies effective communication and enterprise environment, as opposed to a physical or mechanical mechanism, implies human motivation and implies some sort of successful progress or system outcome. As such, management is not manipulating a mechanism, machine or automated program, not the herding of animals, and can occur either in a legal or in an illegal enterprise or environment. From an individual's perspective, management does not need to be seen solely from an enterprise point of view, because management is an essential function in improving one's life and relationships. Management is therefore everywhere, and it has a wider range of applications. Communication and a positive endeavor are two main aspects of it, either through enterprise or independent pursuit. Plans, measurements, motivational psychological tools, goals, and economic measures, profit, etc., may or may not be necessary components for management. At first, one views management functionally, such as measuring quantity, adjusting plans, meeting goals. This applies even in situations where planning does not take place. From this perspective, Henri Fayal, 1841-1925, considers management to consist of five functions. 1. Planning, forecasting. 2. Organizing. 3. Commanding. 4. Coordinating. 5. Controlling. In another way of thinking, Mary Parker Follett, 1868-1933, allegedly defined management as the art of getting things done through people. She described management as a philosophy. Critics, however, find this definition useful but far too narrow. The phrase "management is what managers do" occurs widely, suggesting the difficulty of defining management without circularity, the shifting nature of definitions, and the connection of managerial practices with the existence of a managerial cadre or of a class. One habit of thought regards management as equivalent to business administration and thus excludes management in places outside commerce, such as charities and the public sector. More broadly, every organization must manage its work, people, processes, technology, etc., to maximize effectiveness. Nonetheless, many refer to university departments that teach management as business schools. Some such institutions, such as the Harvard Business School, use that name, while others, such as the Yale School of Management, employ the broader term management. English speakers may also use the term management or the management as a collective word describing the managers of an organization, for example, a corporation. Historically, this use of the term is often contrasted with the term labor, referring to those being managed. But in the present era, the concept of management is identified in the wide areas, and its frontiers have been pushed to a broader range. Apart from profitable organizations, even non-profit organizations apply management concepts. The concept and its uses are not constrained. Management is the process of planning, organizing, coordinating, leading, and controlling. Most organizations have three management levels: first level, middle level, and top level managers. First line managers are the lowest level of management, and manage the work of non-managerial individuals who are directly involved with the production or creation of the organization's products. First-line managers are often called supervisors but may also be called line managers, office managers, or even foremen. Middle managers include all levels of management between the first-line level and the top level of the organization. These managers manage the work of first-line managers and may have titles such as department head, project leader, plant manager, or division manager. Top managers are responsible for making organization-wide decisions and establishing the plans and goals that affect the entire organization. These individuals typically have executive vice president, president, managing director, chief operating officer, chief executive officer, or chairman of the board. These managers are classified in a hierarchy of authority and perform different tasks. In many organizations, the number of managers at every level resembles a pyramid. Each level is explained below in its different responsibilities and likely job titles. The top or senior layer of management consists of the board of directors, including non-executive directors, executive directors, and independent directors, president, vice president, CEOs, and other members of the C-level executives. Different organizations have various members in their C-suite, including a chief financial officer, chief technology officer, and so on. They are responsible for controlling and overseeing the operations of the entire organization. They set a tone at the top and develop strategic plans, company policies, and make decisions on the organization's overall direction. In addition, top-level managers play a significant role in mobilizing outside resources. Senior managers are accountable to the shareholders, the general public, and public bodies that oversee corporations and similar organizations. Some members of the senior management may serve as the public face of the organization, and they may make speeches to introduce new strategies or appear in marketing. When we return, we'll learn about board of directors. The board of directors is typically primarily composed of non-executives who owe fiduciary duty to shareholders and are not closely involved in the organization's day-to-day activities. However, this varies depending on the type, for example, public versus private, size, and culture of the organization. These directors are theoretically liable for breaches of that duty and typically insured under directors' and officers' liability insurance. Fortune 500 directors are estimated to spend 4.4 hours per week on board duties, and median compensation was $212,512 in 2010. The board sets corporate strategy, makes major decisions such as major acquisitions, and hires, evaluates, and fires the top-level manager, chief executive officer, or CEO. The CEO typically hires other positions. However, board involvement in hiring other positions, such as the chief financial officer, CFO, has increased. In 2013, a survey of over 160 CEOs and directors of public and private companies found that the top weaknesses of CEOs were mentoring skills and board engagement, and 10% of companies never evaluated the CEO. The board may also have certain employees, for example, internal auditors, report to them or directly hire independent contractors, for example, the board, through the audit committee, typically selects the auditor. Helpful skills of top management vary by type of organization but typically include a broad understanding of competition, world economies, and politics. In addition, the CEO is responsible for implementing and determining, within the board's framework, the broad policies of the organization. Executive management accomplishes the day-to-day details, including instructions for department budgets, procedures, schedules, appointment of middle-level executives such as department managers, coordination of departments, media and governmental relations, and shareholder communication. Consist of general managers, branch managers, and department managers. They are accountable to the top management for their department's function. They devote more time to organizational and directional functions. Their roles can be emphasized as executing organizational plans in conformance with the company's policies and the objectives of the top management. They define and discuss information and policies from top management to lower management. Most importantly, they inspire and provide guidance to lower-level managers towards better performance. Middle management is the midway management of a categorized organization, being secondary to the senior management but above the deepest levels of operational members. An operational manager may be well thought out by middle management or categorized as non-management operate, liable to the policy of the specific organization. The efficiency of the middle level is vital in any organization since they bridge the gap between top level and bottom level staff. Their functions include: design and implement effective group and intergroup work and information systems. Define and monitor group level performance indicators. Diagnose and resolve problems within and among work groups. Design and implement reward systems that support cooperative behavior. They also make decisions and share ideas with top managers. Lower managers include supervisors, section leaders, forepersons, and team leaders. They focus on controlling and directing regular employees. They are usually responsible for assigning employees tasks, guiding and supervising employees on day-to-day activities, ensuring the quality and quantity of production and/or service, making recommendations and suggestions to employees on their work, and channeling employee concerns that they cannot resolve mid-level managers or other administrators. The first level or frontline managers also act as role models for their employees. In some types of work, frontline managers may also do some of the same tasks that employees do, at least some of the time. For example, in some restaurants, the frontline managers will also serve customers during a very busy day. Frontline managers typically provide training for new employees, basic supervision, motivation, performance feedback and guidance. Some frontline managers may also provide career planning for employees who aim to rise within the organization. Colleges and universities worldwide offer bachelor's degrees, graduate degrees, diplomas, and certificates in management, generally within their colleges of business, business schools or faculty of management, and other related departments. In the 2010s, there has been an increase in online management education and training in electronic educational technology, also called e-learning. Online education has increased the accessibility of management training to people who do not live near a college or university or cannot afford to travel to a city where such training is available. While some professions require academic credentials to work in the profession, for example, law, medicine, engineering, which require the Bachelor of Law, Doctor of Medicine, and Bachelor of Engineering degrees, management and administration positions do not necessarily require the completion of academic degrees. Some well-known senior executives in the US who did not complete a degree include Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, and Mark Zuckerberg. However, many managers and executives have completed some type of business or management training, such as a Bachelor of Commerce or a Master of Business Administration degree. Some major organizations, including companies, nonprofit organizations, and governments, require applicants to managerial or executive positions to hold at minimum a bachelor's degree in a field related to administration or management, or in the case of business jobs, a Bachelor of Commerce or a similar degree. The most common business programs at the undergraduate level are the Bachelor of Business Administration, BBA, and Bachelor of Commerce, B.com. These typically comprise a four-year program designed to give students an overview of the role of managers in planning and directing within an organization. Course topics include accounting, financial management, statistics, marketing, strategy, and related areas. Many other undergraduate degrees include the study of management, such as Bachelor of Arts degrees with a major in Business Administration or Management and Bachelor of Public Administration, BPA, a degree designed for individuals aiming to work as bureaucrats in government jobs. Many colleges and universities also offer certificates and diplomas in Business Administration or Management, typically requiring 1 to 2 years of full-time study. Note that one often needs an undergraduate degree in a STEM area to manage technological areas. At the graduate level, students aiming at careers as managers or executives may choose to specialize in major sub-areas of management or business administration such as entrepreneurship, human resources, international business, organizational behavior, organizational theory, strategic management, accounting, corporate finance, entertainment, global management, healthcare management, investment management, sustainability, and real estate. A Master of Business Administration, MBA, is the most popular professional degree at the master's level and can be obtained from many universities in the United States. MBA programs provide further education in management and leadership for graduate students. Other master's degrees in business and management include the Master of Management, MM, and the Master of Science, MSc, in business administration or management, typically taken by students aiming to become researchers or professors. There are also specialized master's degrees in administration for individuals aiming at careers outside of business, such as the Master of Public Administration, MPA, degree, also offered as a Master of Arts in Public Administration in some universities, for students aiming to become managers or executives in the public service, and the Master of Health Administration, for students aiming to become managers or executives in the healthcare and hospital sector. Management doctorates are the most advanced terminal degrees in business and management. Most individuals obtaining management doctorates take the programs to obtain the training in research methods, statistical analysis, and writing academic papers that they will need to seek careers as researchers, senior consultants, and/or professors in business administration or management. There are three main types of management doctorates: the Doctor of Management, DM, the Doctor of Business Administration, DBA, and the PhD in Business Administration or Management. In the 2010s, doctorates in business administration and management are available with many specializations. While management trends can change so fast, the long-term trend in management has been defined by a market embracing diversity and rising service industry. Managers are currently being trained to encourage greater equality for minorities and women in the workplace by offering increased flexibility in working hours, better retraining, and innovative, and usually industry-specific, performance markers. Managers destined for the service sector are trained to use unique measurement techniques, better worker support, and more charismatic leadership styles. Human resources find itself increasingly working with management in a training capacity to help collect management data on the success, or failure, of management actions with employees. Evidence-based management is an emerging movement to use the current, best evidence in management and decision-making. It is part of the larger movement towards evidence-based practices. Evidence-based management entails managerial decisions and organizational practices informed by the best available evidence. As with other evidence-based practice, this is based on the three principles of 1. Published peer-reviewed, often in management or social science journals, research evidence that bears on whether and why a particular management practice works, 2. Judgment and experience from contextual management practice, to understand the organization and interpersonal dynamics in a situation and determine the risks and benefits of available actions, and 3. The preferences and values of those affected. Some see management as a late modern, in the sense of late modernity, conceptualization. It cannot have a pre-modern history on those terms, only harbingers, such as stewards. Others, however, detect management-like thought among ancient Sumerian traders, and the builders of the pyramids of ancient Egypt. Slave owners through the centuries faced the problems of exploiting, motivating a dependent but sometimes unenthusiastic or recalcitrant workforce, but many pre-industrial enterprises, given their small scale, did not feel compelled to face the issues of management systematically. However, innovations such as the spread of Arabic numerals, 5th to 15th centuries, and the codification of double-entry bookkeeping, 1494, provided tools for management assessment, planning, and control. An organization is more stable if members have the right to express their differences and solve their conflicts within it. While one person can begin an organization, it is lasting when it is left in the care of many and when many desire to maintain it. A weak manager can follow a strong one, but not another weak one, and maintain authority. A manager seeking to change an established organization should retain at least a shadow of the ancient customs. With the changing workplaces of industrial revolutions in the 18th and 19th centuries, military theory and practice contributed to managing the newly popular factories. Given the scale of most commercial operations and the lack of mechanized record-keeping and recording before the Industrial Revolution, it made sense for most owners of enterprises in those times to carry out management functions by and for themselves. But with the growing size and complexity of organizations, a distinction between owners, individuals, industrial dynasties, or groups of shareholders, and day-to-day managers, independent specialists in planning and control, gradually became more common. The management field originated in ancient China, including possibly the first highly centralized bureaucratic state and the earliest, by the 2nd century BC, example of an administration based on merit through testing. Some theorists have cited ancient military texts as providing lessons for civilian managers. For example, in his 6th century BC work The Art of War, Chinese General Sun Tzu recommends, when rephrased in modern terminology, being aware of and acting on strengths and weaknesses of both a manager's organization and a foe's. The writings of influential Chinese legalist philosopher Shen Duhai may embody a rare pre-modern example of abstract theory of administration. American philosopher Hurley G. Creel and other scholars find the influence of Chinese administration in Europe by the 12th century. Thomas Taylor Meadows, Britain's consul in Guangzhou, argued in his desultory notes on the government and people of China, 1847, that the long duration of the Chinese Empire is solely and altogether owing to the good government which consists in the advancement of men of talent and merit only, and that the British must reform their civil service by making the institution meritocratic. Influenced by the ancient Chinese imperial examination, the Northcote Trevelyan Report of 1854 recommended that recruitment should be based on merit determined through competitive examination. Candidates should have a solid general education to enable interdepartmental transfers, and promotion should be through achievement rather than preferment, patronage, or purchase. This led to the implementation of Her Majesty's Civil Service as a systematic, meritocratic civil service bureaucracy. Like the British, the development of French bureaucracy was influenced by the Chinese system. Voltaire claimed that the Chinese had perfected moral science, and François Quesnay advocated an economic and political system modeled after the Chinese. French civil service examinations adopted in the late 19th century were also heavily based on general cultural studies. These features have been likened to the earlier Chinese model. Various ancient and medieval civilizations produced mirrors for princes' books, which aimed to advise new monarchs on how to govern. Plato described job specialization in 350 BC, and Al-Farabi listed several leadership traits in AD 900. Other examples include the Indian Artashastra by Chanakya, written around 300 BC, and The Prince by Italian author Niccolò Machiavelli, circa 1515. Written in 1776 by Adam Smith, a Scottish moral philosopher, The Wealth of Nations discussed efficient work organization through division of labor. Smith described how changes in processes could boost productivity in the manufacture of pins. While individuals could produce 200 pins per day, Smith analyzed the steps involved in the manufacture and, with 10 specialists, enabled the production of 48,000 pins per day. Classical economists such as Adam Smith, 1723-1790, and John Stuart Mill, 1806-1873, provided a theoretical background to resource allocation, production, economics, and pricing issues. About the same time, innovators like Eli Whitney, 1765-1825, James Watt, 1736-1819, and Matthew Boulton, 1728-1809, developed elements of technical production such as standardization, quality control procedures, cost accounting, interchangeability of parts, and work planning. Many of these management aspects existed in the pre-1861 slave-based sector of the U.S. economy. That environment saw 4 million people, as the contemporary usages had it, managed in profitable quasi-mass production before wage slavery eclipsed chattel slavery. Salaried managers as an identifiable group first became prominent in the late 19th century. As large corporations began to overshadow small family businesses, personnel management positions became more necessary. Businesses grew into large corporations, and the need for clerks, bookkeepers, secretaries, and managers expanded. The demand for trained managers led college and university administrators to consider and move forward with plans to create the first schools of business on their campuses. At the turn of the 20th century, the need for skilled and trained managers had become increasingly apparent. The demand occurred as personnel departments began to expand rapidly. In 1915, less than 1 in 20 manufacturing firms had a dedicated personnel department. By 1929, that number had grown to over one-third. Formal management education became standardized at colleges and universities. Colleges and universities capitalized on the needs of corporations by forming business schools and corporate placement departments. This shift toward formal business education marked the creation of a corporate elite in the US by about 1900. One finds managers trying to place their theories on what they regarded as a thoroughly scientific basis. Examples include Henry R. Towne's Science of Management in the 1890s, Frederick Winslow Taylor's The Principles of Scientific Management, 1911, Lillian Gilbreth's Psychology of Management, 1914, Frank and Lillian Gilbreth's Applied Motion Study, 1917, and Henry L. Gantt's Charts, 1910s. J. Duncan wrote the first college management textbook in 1911. In 1912, Yoichi Ueno introduced Taylorism to Japan and became the first management consultant of the Japanese management style. His son Ichiro Ueno pioneered Japanese quality assurance. The first comprehensive theories of management appeared around 1920. The Harvard Business School offered the first Master of Business Administration degree, MBA, in 1921. People like Henri Fayal, 1841-1925, and Alexander Church, 1866-1936, described the various branches of management and their interrelationships. In the early 20th century, people like Ordway Teed, 1891-1973, Walter Scott, 1869-1955, and J. Mooney applied the principles of psychology to management. Other writers, such as Elton Mayo, 1880-1949, Mary Parker Follett, 1868-1933, Chester Barnard, 1886-1961, Max Weber, 1864-1920, who saw what he called the administrator as a bureaucrat, Rensis Likert, 1903-1981, and Chris Argyris, born 1923, approached the phenomenon of management from a sociological perspective. The 1930s and 1940s saw the development of a militarization trend in management in parts of Eurasia, both the NKVD, in the Soviet Union, and the SS, in the Greater Germanic Reich, for example, managed labor camps as industrial enterprises using slave labor supervised by uniformed cadres. Military habits persisted in some management circles. Peter Drucker, 1909-2005, wrote one of the earliest books on applied management, Concept of the Corporation, published in 1946. It resulted from Alfred Sloan, chairman of General Motors until 1956, commissioning a study of the organization. Drucker went on to write 39 books, many in the same vein. H. Dodge, Ronald Fisher, 1890-1962, and Thornton C. Fry introduced statistical techniques into management studies. In the 1940s, Patrick Blackett worked to develop the applied mathematics science of operations research, initially for military operations. Operations research, sometimes known as management science, but distinct from Taylor's scientific management, attempts to take a scientific approach to solve decision problems and can apply directly to multiple management problems, particularly in the areas of logistics and operations. Some of the later 20th century developments include the theory of constraints, introduced in 1984, management by objectives, systematized in 1954, Reengineering, the early 1990s, Six Sigma, 1986, Management by Walking Around, 1970s, The Viable System Model, 1972, and various information technology-driven theories such as agile software development, so named from 2001, as well as group management theories such as Cog's Ladder, 1972, and the notion of thriving on chaos, 1987. As the general recognition of managers as a class solidified during the 20th century and gave perceived practitioners of the art science of management a certain amount of prestige, the way opened for popularized systems of management ideas to peddle their wares. In this context, many management fads may have had more to do with pop psychology than with scientific theories of management. In the 21st century, observers find it increasingly difficult to subdivide management into functional categories in this way. More and more processes simultaneously involve several categories. Instead, one tends to think about the various processes, tasks, and objects subject to management. Branches of management theory also exist relating to nonprofits and government, such as public administration, public management, and educational management. Further, management programs related to civil society organizations have also spawned nonprofit management and social entrepreneurship programs. Note that many of the assumptions made by management have come under attack from business ethics viewpoints, critical management studies, and anti-corporate activism. As one consequence, workplace democracy, sometimes referred to as workers' self-management, has become both more common and more advocated, in some places distributing all management functions among workers, each of whom takes on a portion of the work. However, these models predate any current political issue and may occur more naturally than a command hierarchy. All management embraces a democratic principle, in that in the long term, the majority of workers must support management. Otherwise, they leave to find other work or go on strike. Despite the move toward workplace democracy, command and control organization structures remain commonplace as de facto organization structures. Indeed, the entrenched nature of command and control is evident in how recent layoffs have been conducted with management ranks affected far less than employees at the lower levels. In some cases, management has rewarded itself with bonuses after laying off lower-level workers. According to leadership academic Manfred F. Arquette de Vries, a contemporary senior management team will inevitably have some personality disorders. In profitable organizations, management's primary function is to satisfy a range of stakeholders. This typically involves making a profit for the shareholders, creating valued products at a reasonable cost for customers, and providing great employment opportunities for employees. In the case of nonprofit management, one of the main functions is keeping the faith of donors. In most management and governance models, shareholders vote for the board of directors, and the board then hires senior management. Some organizations have experimented with other methods, such as employee voting models, of selecting or reviewing managers, but this is rare.